The following program has been recorded and edited by the Public Affairs Department of CBS News. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's broadcast of The Hidden Revolution is the third in a series of six new radio documentaries. Our program tonight, 20th Century Nomads, is brought to you by Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company of Columbus, Ohio.
Good evening. I'm Howard K. Smith. This chorus from the Broadway hit Paint Your Wagon provides a rousing musical moment in the theater. But the lyrics also describe an American social phenomenon that has been with us always. Stephen Vincent Benet wrote, "Americans are always moving on. It's an old Spanish custom gone astray. When the whistle blows, they go away." Today, in ever-increasing numbers, Americans are on the move. We move for a variety of reasons, yet we share one goal in common. We're searching for something better, something more meaningful than the lives we have left behind.
I never was happy or content anywhere else. The small town where I had lived, well, I was kind of on the wrong side of the tracks. Well, I wanted to be respected, and I worked hard, but I never did get there.
I went to this community expecting to find activity, people alive and aware and excited about things. Instead, I found people excited about only material things.
These people left their former homes and moved on. They have done so, as have millions of others, eagerly, expectantly, fearfully. For they have wandered across America, these 20th century nomads, to improve their health, to find a job, to raise their children. Now settled for the moment, they reflect about the changes in their lives, and their reflection should give us pause. For these people are part of a vast migration of Americans that is rapidly changing the world we know.
Americans on the move. Our program tonight probes the question of why people change their address. What happens when they do? Their expectations, their hopes, their difficulties. Moving always means new faces, new responsibilities, new opportunities. It also brings with it the problem of adjusting to new environments. One thing that doesn't change, though, is the need for insurance. And here's where Nationwide stands ready to assist you. In a growing number of states, more and more people are finding Nationwide insurance the best answer. And it's not surprising. Nationwide, you see, offers one-stop service. This means one Nationwide representative can handle all your insurance needs. In fact, he can help you choose the exact protection you need from 110 different policies for your auto, your home, your family, your business. What's more, Nationwide is famous for low, really low rates that never upset the family budget. So whether you're a newcomer or an old-timer in your community, discover how your Nationwide man can meet all your insurance needs. And if you would like a free transcript of tonight's broadcast, just write Nationwide Insurance, Box 246, Columbus 16, Ohio.
The United States Census Bureau reported that 33 million Americans moved last year. Some of these moves were in the same neighborhood or city. But 5 million Americans moved from one state to another. We move because the American Odyssey has always been part of our tradition. Because space and time have always been tools with which to shape our destiny. But never before have we moved in such numbers. The dimensions of this movement indicate it is another element of a hidden revolution. Few studies of this mobility have been made. Yet each year, one out of five of us moves, and each move changes our lives and the lives of our children. There are four major currents of migration in the United States. One major movement is from the South to the North. It is predominantly an immigration of the Negro population.
When I come out of the Air Force, I moved to Detroit because I heard the North offers more opportunities for Negroes than the South does. I started washing cars 11 hours a week for $8 a day, but it kept me eating. During the time I was having this hard way to go, I wouldn't write home to my mother because I didn't want to know how much hard way I was having. I wanted to make it.
Since 1950, the total Negro population in the United States has increased 3,700,000. More than two-thirds of that gain has been outside the southern states. If the current rate of migration continues, within a few years, most American Negroes will be living outside the South. Another major current of migration is from the farm to the city. Since 1950, 1 million persons have left the farm each year.
We had just about half our crops gathered, and we had a severe hurricane through that country. It blowed all the corn down on the ground, and it started raining on it. After about a week of that, I went in to see a fellow about selling some corn, and he asked me about going to work for the railroad. Just one step led to the other from there. The average income on the railroad is about $4,800 a year, and on the farm, you have to be pretty lucky to hit that high.
And yet, for others, the large metropolitan city has its grim aspects. The move from the city to the suburbs, a third major current of migration, is one of the most significant social phenomena today. This man left the city for many reasons.
We didn't like the dirt that we had come to associate with the city. On weekends, we would try to get out of town, which would take us numerous hours of misery. We tried to park the car every day, and every day we had the same problem of finding a space to park it. I didn't want to send the wife out with the children to walk down the street or even go to the park because we had witnessed young gangs congregating, beating up passers-by, and we were just completely fed up.
Another vocal critic of life in the big city is taxi driver Max Shapiro.
I don't like the city because it's too congested. The housing program is not big enough. It's not fast enough. There's no reason for it. We have the technology, the know-how of production. We're not doing anything about it. The city schools are crowded, and there are insufficient teachers. There's no bargain living in the city. None whatsoever.
This movement from our large metropolitan centers to the suburbs is literally changing the face and the structure of our country. John Fisher is the editor of Harper's Magazine. He believes the city is a victim of this new mobility.
The old cities are being strangled as homes and factories and offices move to the suburbs and on to the exurbs. Great metropolitan regions seem to be withering at their core. The center is dying. Manhattan Island, for example, is losing population. Merchants in the Loop District of Chicago saw their business drop about 16% in the years between 1954 and 1958. Something similar, I think, is happening to virtually every other city across the country.
But if some cities are dying, others are being born. A moving population has created new communities throughout the United States. Our reporters followed the fourth major current of migration from the east to the west. For Horace Greeley's advice to a young man continues to send Americans westward. During the years 1950 to 1958, while the total population was increasing 15%, the population of the western states soared 29%. Many of these people arrived in California in communities like Anaheim. This is the Anaheim Union High School Band. The young people of Anaheim perhaps best represent the drive and the unbounded optimism that pervades that community today. We have come out here to examine in microcosm the story of mobile Americans. In Anaheim, an area that contains few natives, we have focused on the challenges confronting a mobile population, challenges that are faced by Americans wherever they move. 10 years ago, Anaheim had a population of less than 12,000 people. Today, its population numbers almost 100,000. It is predominantly composed of middle-income families who have come here for their health, for the climate, and for economic opportunity. The people who have come represent all the major currents of migration. They have come from the east, from the large metropolitan cities, from the farms, and from the deep south. Where once there were orange groves, there are now tract homes, shopping centers, and the services of a growing suburban area. Mayor A.J. Schutte represents the success story that is Anaheim.
I grew up on a farm in Missouri. I drove as many mules up and down the corn rows as any young man in Missouri. Dust and sweat and fed cattle with slush and slime and snow and cold weather. Little did I think that I ever be mayor of the finest diversified city in the world, and I say that with sincerity.
But even in a new community where almost everyone is a migrant, there is nostalgia for the past. Carrie Lou Sutherland, society editor for a local newspaper, speaks wistfully of the Anaheim she knew.
I loved the trees. I always hate to see a tree pulled, and of course the orange groves were so beautiful and so glistening. And today, to me, they look like a draggled out old woman that's had too much work to do. You knew everyone, walked down the street, and now you go downtown, you don't see anyone you know. That's how it's changed.
The new Anaheim was not to be denied. Americans on the move arrived from outlying districts and all parts of the country. Like other growing communities, it is characterized by a large proportion of young people. At Western High School, a group of students discuss life in a new community.
Here, things are new, and everybody's on pretty much of an equal basis. And you think, well, here's something I'd like to do, and here's something we should do. We haven't done this before, but there's not very much been done before, so let's try it. By next year, all the orchard trees will be out, and the dairy land will be gone, and houses will be here, industry will spring up. There's a tremendous influx of people.
The only objection I have is that there's so many people, and I've heard this complaint time and time again, and you get the feeling sometimes you just like to get rid of all of them and just go off by yourself.
What we're looking for, I feel, is a dream world. This idea of too many people, it's very interesting. The people move in a tract home, they're here for 2 years, and then they begin to think of themselves as natives, and the orange grove across the street becomes very dear to them, and when they see it torn down and made into another tract, they're very upset, and they don't stop and consider that 2 years ago they were an orange grove.
How do our younger children adjust to their new environments? Our reporter spoke to students at the Jefferson Elementary School.
I don't like to go in another school very much. I haven't been 2 years in one school. I have always been changing schools, leaving friends and good teachers.
Well, it's not easy to come from school to school because, well, everybody looks at you and wonders, well, is he going to be a good boy or is he going to be a bad boy or is he going to be a good girl or a bad girl?
We asked Ada Wilcox, principal of the Jefferson School, about this problem.
They are fidgety in class. They are oftentimes extremely sensitive to the remarks of other children. Many of them have very deep emotional problems. 40% of our students have quite large problems to them as a result of moving. To date, the first 9 weeks of our present school year, we have made 289 transfers already in a school the size of 850 students.
For educators, there is the problem of curriculum to meet the needs of our mobile youth. Goodwin Watson is professor of education at Teachers College, Columbia University.
You can't plan a course of activity and guidance for a given child with the expectation that he's going to be around to carry it out. It makes for improvised, filling activities at the moment rather than building long-range needs. Some people have said this makes a need for a more uniform curriculum. If children are going to move at this rate from one school to another, one town to another, perhaps we ought to have something more like the French system in which every child in a given grade is studying a given subject and is at a certain point in the textbook. I think that much uniformity would probably be undesirable. Most educators feel that our innovations and originality in particular districts is worth keeping.
There are other problems in a burgeoning community. This is Police Chief Mark Stevens of Anaheim. He supervises a force of 130 men and women.
Our largest problem in this growing community definitely is traffic. Our traffic accidents and congestion of traffic due to this movement of population into the city. And our juvenile delinquency problem, which we didn't used to have at all, has increased tremendously. Our arrest record to date over last year is up 65%.
But the influx of people into a community is more than a matter of statistics. The migrant looks for values in a new community. Mrs. Richard Lauer moved here 3 years ago.
I was lost for an entire year. As a matter of fact, I moped and moaned around here until I wondered really if I were a worthwhile person at all. I had a lovely home, wonderful husband, two darling preschool children. And you have that lovely home, and you can get awfully lonely of just cleaning house and keeping Junior in the backyard. Somehow you feel there must be more to life, that it can't merely be this day-to-day existence. You have no contacts, you have no roots, you have nothing, really.
Mr. and Mrs. Fred Brewer worked for a local newspaper. They came here from the East to settle down, but they did not stay.
I went to this community expecting to find activity, people alive and aware and excited about things. Instead, I found people excited about only material things. I remember the man next door. This was his life. He spent his time polishing his car. I expected open space. Then I found tract home after tract home breathing down the neck of tract home.
The contrast for me was rather dramatic because I had been newspapering the daily newspaper in New England, and the community itself was nearly 350 years old. And so traditions and culture are pretty well ingrained. To one who is used to people I had known who were excited by ideas and thoughts and what was happening in Washington and what was happening in Russia, but out there it was an intellectual desert as far as I'm concerned.
Mrs. Brewer was the society editor for her newspaper. To her, the community clubs typified the cultural life of a city without roots.
All these people move in here, and they immediately get together with their neighbors, and they decide they're going to form a club, you see, and they elect all their offices, and then they call me, and they say, we have a club, and they give me the names, and they give the offices, and they say, now we're looking for a cause.
But most people in Anaheim are excited by the possibilities that life in a new community offers. Here is a young high school student.
I've seen a lot of different things. I've worked in oil fields in Texas and cornfields in Nebraska and every other thing. And I've noticed here that there is just a conglomeration of all different types of people from everywhere. And I never was happy or content anywhere else because I didn't exactly find what I wanted. The small town where I had lived before I was on my own, I was kind of on the wrong side of the tracks, and I wanted to work in school, and I wanted to be respected and hold the respect of the students and the teachers, and I worked hard, but I never did get there. So when I came out here a few months after I was here, well, I started noticing that the kids that did pitch in and work could work their ways right up to the top and earn the respect of the students and the teachers and et cetera. So I just pitched in and went to work.
Here is Mrs. Richard Lauer again.
It's just fun to see these people grow in their interest and their concern, both for their children and for the other people in the area. And we haven't any staid form in our community. It's flexible. We can go in any direction we choose. So that if we choose to make a real extraordinary city in terms of creative opportunities, we can.
These people of Anaheim came to a new area and settled down. Their concerns were those of security and adjustment. But what of those who set out to build better, more useful lives and failed?
We decided to move because there wasn't any work to be found back there. My husband made with the highway department $70 every 2 weeks. I had a terrible time coming across country. Our money started giving out. We had to go to Salvation Army to get help for gas. The children and I slept in the back seat of the car, my husband on the front seat. We didn't have money for a hotel room. We had about $3, I think, when we got to California.
When this family arrived in California, they were stateless persons. Lacking the necessary residence requirements of 3 years in California, they were unable to obtain any public assistance from state welfare agencies. Residence laws required that a person spend a specified length of time in an area before welfare services are available to them. All but two of our states have some form of residence requirements ranging from 6 months to 5 years. This woman was delighted with her new home in California. Then her husband lost his job.
He wasn't entitled to any compensation or
any benefits whatsoever, so we had a pretty hard time. We come way across the country. It's almost like another country because it just seems so far away. We just want to try and make a go of it.
This woman needed medical attention for two of her three children.
The nurse came out to see me, and they had me to come up to the Board of Health, and they examined the children. They told me I had to come back to New York City because my two children had tuberculosis, and they couldn't treat them unless I was there at least 2 years. I asked them, was it anything they could do for my children or at least give them some medicine? They told me they couldn't give them any medicine, that they would have to come back to New York City.
Many attempts have been made to amend these laws. Some feel, however, that any relaxation of residence requirements places an unfair burden on the adopted states. William R. McDougall is the manager of the County Supervisors Association of California.
As long as counties and states provide the bulk of financing of our millions in welfare payments, they must be allowed to protect themselves against a deluge of non-residents seeking money. A needy person's home state should be responsible for his permanent care until the federal government accepts the responsibility of paying for the care of these non-residents.
Most of the people in need who have been denied public aid must turn to the private charities for help. It has been estimated that 250,000 Americans each year require help and are unable to get it due to residence requirements. The National Travelers Aid Association has devoted much of its efforts to assisting these people. Miss Dorothy De La Pole is the executive director of the Travelers Aid Association of Los Angeles.
Residence laws fail to accomplish the purpose for which they were originally developed. All of the studies made try to show whether people did or didn't move into other areas in order to get on relief, as people say. No study has ever proved anything at all substantial to bear that out. Now, people won't believe that, but it really is true. As, for example, when you could get residence by going to Mississippi, people didn't go to Mississippi. And on the other hand, where in the state of California, we have one of the more restrictive laws, people are not kept from coming to California.
Governor Edmund G. Pat Brown of California gives his position on state residence laws.
A mobile labor force is a necessity in 20th century America. Frequently, welfare aid of only a short duration to newcomers in a community can mean the difference between human tragedy and human usefulness. Our new citizens have contributed vastly to our booming economy. The residence laws should be revised so that the citizens of any state coming into California can receive our benefits. This can be done by setting minimum standards for social benefits throughout the United States and on a national basis. This is necessary because California pays the highest social benefits in the nation, and we cannot be penalized because we desire to be more just than other states. The Conference of Governors has already passed a resolution in favor of liberalizing these laws. I heartily endorse any efforts to liberalize residence requirements for welfare aid.
We'll continue our examination of the implications of mobility in just a moment.
Are you a 20th century nomad when weekends arrive? Do you like to fill up your car with gas and head for faraway places? You'll have more fun if you know your auto insurance is up to date, when you know you can depend on fast, friendly claim service if trouble does arise. These are just two good reasons why over 2 million motorists insure with Nationwide. In addition, you enjoy protection against all major hazards of the road. In fact, Nationwide Auto Insurance offers you 20 expanded coverages for true peace of mind driving. When you insure your car with Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company of Columbus, Ohio, full-time claims adjusters are at your service. Remember, too, you may save up to 30% with Nationwide's auto insurance. For all the facts without obligation, get in touch with the Nationwide representative in your community. Call him tonight or tomorrow for sure.
A mobile population has left its mark on Anaheim as it has on similar communities throughout the country. The problems created by this migration are complex. Some of those problems are merely the growing pains of new communities. But what is the real meaning of mobility to us as a nation? Here is John Fisher, the editor of Harper's Magazine.
Any of us today can cross the continent in about 6 hours, instead of the grueling 15 months that was considered normal in the not-so-remote wagon train era. So it is not surprising that Americans have lost the sense of tragic necessity that was characteristic of our Puritan ancestors, and is still characteristic, for that matter, of most other people. We've got into the habit of assuming that anything is possible, that all problems can be solved given enough time and effort, and that the happy ending is a normal expectation. To a man like Cotton Mather, this would have sounded blasphemous. To an Indian or a Chinese peasant, it is simply incomprehensible, one of those things which make the Americans seem so enigmatic to the rest of the world.
Public opinion pollster Samuel Lubell describes the political implications of this high mobility.
It is making the voting in the nation less stable. When people move away from their home surroundings, the hold of family and party tradition on them is weakened. Then in these new communities, people from vastly different backgrounds all share much the same economic and social interests. Nearly all of these families, for example, will be deep in debt buying their homes. If you have a sharp economic change, as happened in the recession of 1958, they are likely to be affected the same way and will shift together in their voting, upsetting the old balance. In short, all this reshuffling is setting the stage for quicker and bigger shifts between the two parties. Finally, all this migration is also part of the trend towards the greater urbanization of American life, which is making different parts of the country more and more alike politically. Wherever I travel, I am struck by the fact that I get the same reactions from the same kind of people, whether they are in California, the East, or even the South.
Professor Goodwin Watson believes there are dangers involved in this high mobility.
The increased mobility will certainly continue the process of making us more homogeneous, more alike. You could take a plane now to a city in a distant part of the United States, and within 15 minutes you'd recognize all the institutions of life there. People would look very much the same to you, although you had never seen any of them before. This means we may have a little more sense of solidarity, but it does raise the problem of how we're going to cultivate diversity. And maybe the answer to that is to be found in respecting something that's more individual than sectional. The right of each child to become his unique individual personality with his own uncommon characteristics.
Perhaps the meaning of Americans on the move is best expressed by this young high school student in Anaheim.
Most people don't think about the privilege of being able to get up and move when they want to, but if they weren't able to, it would take an awful lot away from America. Well, like our heritage, you know, being able to move, sort of the pioneering spirit.
This is Howard K. Smith. Good night.
You have been listening to 20th Century Nomads, written and produced by Arthur Rapin. Associated in production, Virginia Lichtner and Joel Heller. Peter Thomas speaking. This has been a Unit 1 production, pre-recorded and edited by the Public Affairs Department of CBS News. Tonight's broadcast of The Hidden Revolution has been brought to you by Nationwide Insurance of Columbus, Ohio. Next month, Nationwide will bring you the fourth program in our new series. Be sure to tune in then on February 2nd, same time, same station. And remember, if you'd like a free transcript of tonight's broadcast, write Nationwide Insurance, Box 246, Columbus 16, Ohio.
CBS News from Where It Happens, World News Roundup, mornings on the CBS Radio Network.